Well, thanks, Dr. Phillips. I appreciate all of you coming so early in the morning and to listen a little bit about what we've made in advancements in the area of PERS. And I want to thank Beringer for organizing this session and inviting me to attend and give you a little update, because I'm going to go with a very optimistic approach. You know, our industry has been beat up pretty bad the last few months, and we could feel pretty negative about PERS, couldn't we? But I'm going to say, let's be optimistic about it. I'm not going to take that approach. I'm going to be optimistic. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about some what I think are key advances in PERS control and PERS eradication, which is eventually our long-term goal. And I'm also going to highlight some new tools that have been developed in the areas of sampling for diagnostic testing, biosecurity, and tools to assist with area control. So as I was talking to Dr. Phillips last night, he made a great analogy. He said, for too many years, we've been playing defense with PERS. It's time to go on the offense and take advantage of all this information and these new tools. So I'm optimistic, and let's get into some of these reasons why. I'm going to talk, first of all, about oral fluid sampling from Jeff Zimmerman's group. I'm going to talk about air filtration from our group. I'm going to talk about the use of modified live vaccines as therapeutic means to vaccinate populations, talk about risk assessment tools, geographic information systems, and then area collaboration. So six very, very important new developments, advances, new tools in the toolbox, so to speak. So let's start with some work from Iowa State on oral fluids. Oral fluids, the sampling of oral fluids for the presence of pathogens, the presence of antibodies to pathogens, is really an old idea that came from human medicine. There's many diseases that medical doctors are detecting in saliva samples that people will actually take and mail into the clinic, such as HIV, for example. So it's an old technology, but what Jeff Zimmerman's done is he's taken that and he's applied it to swine populations. How can we monitor and understand better the prevalence of pathogens in swine populations without having to bleed pigs? Let's make it easy. Let's make it simple. And let's make it a way where we can sample many, many large populations without necessarily somebody having to go to the facility and bleed a lot of animals. So what Jeff has done, along with John Prickett, his graduate student, have developed a very, very nice protocol for basically hanging cotton ropes in finishing pens and watching how animals come up and actually chew on these ropes and taking the saliva from those ropes and submitting it for diagnostic testing, looking for PERS virus, PCV2, swine influenza, and Mycoplasma pneumoniae are all agents where they've been able to demonstrate are present in oral fluids. And with this very innovative rope sampling method, it's a great way that we can get a lot of barns tested and minimize the labor and minimize the cost. So I think that's a great system. They've got it worked out. They've got it organized with a protocol and actually a package of materials you can get. And I think that's the future when it comes to sampling large populations, particularly in area control programs. So a lot of credit to Jeff Zimmerman right off the bat and the work he's done with John Prickett at Iowa State. The second tool in the toolbox that's new is air filtration. This is something we've been working on real hard the last few years at the University of Minnesota. Basically, I want to just let you know that we have proven that the ability of PERS virus and mycoplasma to travel long distances, at least out to 3 miles, is real. We have collected air samples from a point source and found those agents out to 3 miles in our Swine Disease Eradication Center research farm. So there's no question anymore about the risk of airborne spread or even the reality of airborne spread. It's a proven fact. There's no more argument there. It's black and white. In fact, I'd predict that these agents can go much farther than our 3 mile point. That's just the last the farthest point we looked, basically. Because of that risk, we've been studying air filtration, how to protect populations from incoming pathogens by filtering the air. Now, there's an out-of-the-box idea, isn't it? Because can you imagine filtering the air coming into pig barns? That seems a little out of the box. But right now, I tell you what, it's the only thing I've seen that really has a chance to stop introduction of virus into populations. Now, we've been proving this using a proof of concept model at our Swine Disease Eradication Center farm, basically looking at filtered barns and non-filtered barns in a model of a swine production region. And we've shown now for almost 3 years in this small-scale model that we can protect populations of naive pigs that are under air filtration from PRRS virus infection and from Mycoplasma hound pneumoniae infection. In contrast, in that model, with non-filtered facilities that are matched other than the absence of a filtration system, those populations are becoming infected with both of those agents approximately 30 to 50% of the time. So it's a proof of concept model to show that, yes, indeed, air filtration is important. Now, air filtration has a cost, and so we've been looking at alternative strategies as well. Can we reduce the efficiencies of the filters? Can we use different filters? I've had a lot of help from Filtration Systems Incorporated on that question. Can we use disinfectants like Synergize through the cool cells and protect our populations and actually kill that virus as it moves through that cool cell when it contacts that very effective disinfectant? Yes, it can. Can we use antimicrobial filters, which are not so much based on prevention of introduction, but actually killing as the pathogens pass through the filter, contacting chemicals and killing them as they pass through? We're testing that, too, and that's a very interesting concept that we're looking at, too. So we're trying to find different ways of doing this, so there's going to be options for producers based on their budget, based on their location, and based on their level of risk. And that's, I think, a great example of collaboration of industry, where industries have come together and put resources into that evaluation. They're working very fairly together and very much as a team, and I compliment them for that. And, of course, the next step is to take it to the field. We have got a large-scale project funded by the CAP2 looking at putting air filtration technologies into large sow farms, 2,400 sows or greater, in swine-dense regions such as Martin County, Minnesota, our largest our county where the most pigs are, and looking to see whether these farms that are in these high-dense regions under challenge of airborne diseases can indeed be protected. It's a work in progress, and it's a little early to talk about it right now, but the initial results are very, very, very optimistic. And there I'm working again with Pipestone Swine Vet Center in Fairmont, a real Geist collaboration of veterinary clinics working together with the university to advance that technology. So I'm really excited about that. It's the first thing I've ever really seen in 20 years that has an opportunity to completely stop introduction of this agent, as well as mycoplasma and potentially other agents like swine influenza. So that's tool number two. How about tool number three, modified live vaccines? Now, we've had modified live vaccines for some time, but let's use them in a different way. The traditional way of using a vaccine is to, you know, vaccinate an animal, protect it against infection. That works great. But what about if we used it on an infected population? What if we went into an infected population, vaccinated that population in an effort to reduce shedding, to reduce transmission, to reduce spread of the virus from pig to pig? And John Paul Cano here, Dr. Cano is here, one of my former students who did this work in his PhD. And what he saw was that repeated application of the BI modified live vaccine to an infected population had a number of strengths. It actually prevented shedding from infected animals to commingled sentinels in the same pens. That's high challenge there. Yet repeated application of this vaccine stopped shedding from infected to non-infected pigs. As it would, it also reduced clinical signs. When those pigs were challenged later on with different strains of the virus, those pigs were healthier than those non-vaccinated animals. Now, it didn't prevent infection, and it didn't clear the virus from the body, at least in our model, but it had a number of strengths that I'd like to emphasize today. Looking at transmission from pig to pig, what about taking this into the field now and starting some mass vaccination of large infected finishing populations and trying to reduce the amount of virus excreted into the environment? I think that fits very nicely with an area control program. So it's an old product, but it's a new way of using it. Number four, risk assessment tools. Again, from Iowa State, originally from BI via the AASV, has been what we call the PADRAP, the Production Animal Disease Risk Assessment Program, originally devised by Dr. Dale Polson, and now under the leadership of Dr. Darrell Holtkamp at Iowa State. This is a computer-based tool to measure and monitor internal risk of infection in a herd-to-PERS virus, as well as external risk factors for infection to PERS virus to a herd. And it's really became a gift to the AASV from BI in 2006. And it's had a breeding herd focus, but it's actually now in the phases of developing and rolling out a grow finishing risk assessment tool. Now, to do this, a veterinarian has to be trained through a special session coordinated by AASV. But at least as far as I know, and this number probably needs to be changed, but there's been 1,474 risk assessments completed and 904 sites enrolled. Now, that's a lot of sites. And so if we get all together, we start working together, and we get our farms put through this risk assessment tool, we're going to have a lot better idea of the risk to the farm, but also the role that farm plays in the area. What risks does this farm present to other farms? And we can use this tool to evaluate biosecurity protocols over time. As we apply biosecurity, is our internal risk going down? Is our external risk going down? Are these protocols really paying for themselves? What's their cost benefit? And we can also use it to aid in decision making regarding if we should do regional programs, herd elimination and regional programs. So there's a lot of advantages to this program. And again, a lot of credit to Dale Polson and the gift from BI to the AASV. Tool number five are geographic information systems, which are software packages to assess, monitor, and manage PERS status within an area region. Now, Peter Davies from our group has been a leader in developing these tools. He's using Google Earth, where they'll go out, they'll find the farms, they'll get them placed, they'll be able to look at an entire region using Google Earth. They'll be able to basically tag these farms as far as whether they're PERS positive, whether they're PERS negative, whether they're breeding herds, whether they're weaned to finish farms, whether they're going through eradication processes. What's happening? You know, the old story of a picture worth a thousand words? This is the key, I believe, to true area control, because this gives us a picture of that particular area. And it's dynamic and fluid, and you can change it as that area changes over time. So we can use these tools to organize areas, to facilitate communication and decision-making, and we also can use them to analyze animal flows into the area. What kind of animals, how many animals are coming into the area, how many animals are exiting the area. Again, the picture is worth a thousand words, and this is where we start. Number six, and before we open up to some questions, is really can producers work together in a collaborative effort to control and eventually eradicate PERS from an area? And here I'd like to highlight the work of Dr. Bob Morrison, who from the University of Minnesota has organized producers and veterinarians in a west central county of our state called Stevens County. It's actually my old practice county, and I've been very happy to work with Bob in this. And it's an interesting county in our state. It's got a low external density of pig farms around it, and it's got a moderately high density of pig farms, but it's interesting that there's not a lot of pigs that enter the county. If you look at the flows of animals into that county using some of the tools we talked about a minute ago, there's not a whole lot of pigs that come into that county. And because it's a seed stock producing county primarily, there's a seed stock mentality. Producers understand diagnostics, they understand diseases, they understand eradication. And the animals which enter the county often come from tested herds. So it's an interesting county to first start this process of whether producers can work together, because the mindset is already there. Bob's developed a website. Producers can log in. They can see where their farm is. They can see where their neighbor's farm is. They can see where outbreaks are occurring. Bob's gotten funding from National Pork Board, from PERSCAP, to understand the sero status, the PERS status of those farms, to sequence new isolates. And those producers are sharing that information. They're talking to each other saying, hey, we just had an infection. Look out. You know, and then right at using those GIS tools, that herd is highlighted, and everybody knows on that in that county team what's going on. And I think that's a real great paradigm shift that I don't think we've ever had before in the industry. So it's a lot of progress to Bob, that Bob has made, and a lot of credit to him. And he's looking at expanding this county work to the surrounding counties and actually start to make a very large region of west central Minnesota where there may not be any PERS anymore. Okay. So a lot of producer collaboration, a lot of credit to the producers, and good leadership from Bob Morrison. And it's interesting to see that other such programs are starting in other states, such as Michigan and Illinois. So I think Bob's just kind of cracked the egg, and others are going to follow along. So to conclude, and get ready for some questions, I'm optimistic. I hope I've demonstrated why. We've got new tools. We've answered questions. What were those questions again? Can pathogens travel long distance via the air? Yes. Are regional programs even a possibility? Yes. Can vaccines play a role in these regional programs? Yes. New technologies have been developed. New tools, oral fluid sampling for diagnostic evaluation of populations. Air filtration for preventing introduction of external strains of the virus. And then tools such as the PADRAP, the production area model I just talked about, the risk assessment tool, and the geographic information systems. So let's no longer go on the defensive. Let's be offensive. Let's take the lead, and let's be optimistic about PERS control in the future. There's going to be continued advances, and that's how I'd like to leave you with a message this morning, is a message of optimism, a message of hope, and a message that science and production are working together to answer these questions with the long-term goal, as stated by the AASV, of eradication of this disease from our North American pig population.